The Waddle and Sylvie podcast is presented by the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Download the app and sign up with code WMVP for participating offers. The DraftKings Sportsbook app is an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Use promo code WMVP today.
In the Final Four, Florida Atlantic, San Diego State, and Miami.
I'm cool with that.
Texas had six super seniors. Miami's top two players.
What is a super senior?
Basically, Velus Jones Jr. They transferred. They took a year off. They took the pandemic year, so they were given basically two extra years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, well, they're big.
You know, there's some grown-ass men playing against teenagers.
That's what I mean. So it is, you can see the difference with the size of these athletes.
You know what, real quick, Sylvie and I had this conversation last week briefly about not allowing like a high school kid to go straight from high school to the NFL.
Right.
I can see why football is more strict with regard to it than basketball. Not that there isn't a significant jump physically from high school basketball to the NBA, but from the high school game to the NFL, like you got guys in there that you know, a grown ass 28-year-old man playing against an 18 or 19-year-old kid. Like, I can see why the NFL is trying to maintain a kind of a standard with regard to when you can enter into the league.
But
I can
see it now with basketball too. I mean, it is. It's always been a very physical game at the NBA level, but at the college level, I mean, these guys are men out there.
Outside of the fact that your son's team didn't get into the Final Four,
right?
Have you enjoyed? I've enjoyed the tournament.
It's been great. No number one seed, no number two seed, and no number three seed.
Like Zetterman believes
that's crazy.
Zetterman's on the other side of this conversation. He basically says, well, there's, you know, nobody's going to be interested. I don't know what the television ratings will be. I've enjoyed the fact that there's a 9-2-5s and a 4. Every now and again, chaos and a little unexpected outcome is entertaining. Now, I will agree, I don't believe all of these games have been aesthetically pleasing. The Creighton-San Diego State game, seriously, was a wrestling match and no one could hit a shot. What was it? Those two teams were 5 of 30 from beyond the arc.
Right.
Creighton was 0 for 10 in the second half of that game from distance, and they shot 27% overall in the second half. That's the reason why Creighton lost.
Right. Well, the other thing that really angers me that I saw too much of is the complaining to the officials. I mean, they're getting that right from the NBA players. It is ridiculous how many players were complaining to the officials. I mean, like whining, complaining, and I get it. We're sitting here complaining about it. But at the college level, when you see these guys doing it, I start going, oh, this is all rubbing off from the NBA. No, well, they're taking a page out of the NBA book.
My guess is if you watched, haven't seen a high school basketball game in very long, it's probably trickled down to them as well.
I bet if we went to Avery Zetterman's 9-year-old basketball game,
probably airing out officials from the sidelines.
We would probably see 9-year-olds bitching at officials too. Like that's just the trickle down effect is
they mimic what they see.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
For better and for worse.
People are upset because they say that Miami has bought themselves into the Final Four, basically. With their, you know, they have that billionaire who is basically paying everybody from Life Wallet. He's the one that gave Nigel Pack the $800,000 deal and a car. But, I mean, that's the rules now.
Yeah, now it's just, it's legal. Like, I heard that, I think... Chuck, who, I mean, Charles Barkley is one of our favorites and love Charles on so many fronts. I think was on 60 Minutes this weekend talking about how,
yesterday,
you know, it's a travesty. I mean, look, I think at some point they're going to have to look at this and adjust it or amend it. And I don't think it'll look 5 years from now the way it looks now. There will have to be some guardrails, I think, installed in some way, shape or form. But you can't tell me that there weren't. I mean, this stuff's been going on forever.
Right. Just because now it's out in the open,
right. That's
what kills me. And it's all these traditional programs that are complaining about NIL when, I'm sorry, but all your traditional powerhouses were the ones that everybody was whispering about in the first place.
Exactly.
So that kills me that everyone's upset about it. And I don't hear anyone saying anything about the women basketball players are making some pretty coin with NIL. Miami's Cavender twins were the first NIL athletes, male or female, to make over $1 million. $1 million!
That's unbelievable.
$1 million! I didn't even think they were that good of players. They were at Fresno State, and now they're playing for Miami. The women just lost last weekend.
They have a huge TikTok following, which has allowed them to
make. Do you
to
follow them on TikTok?
I do not, no.
You're a liar.
No, my kids knew them. You know, when I was looking at NIL, and I said, oh, we did one of our shows on it, and our guest said, well, actually, the highest paid right now are two women basketball players. I was like, whoa.
By the way, gymnast, too.
You're right, yeah.
Who is?
There's a gymnast.
There's a couple gymnasts, too.
By the way, Miami, I mean, I would not have known this unless I read this earlier today, that like, not only have they gotten to the Final Four this year, they lost in the Elite Eight last year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, their program is obviously, whether it is being financed correctly or they're just recruiting or whatever the case may be, they have become a team to reckon with for sure. Look, I get it. Again, I said to you, I thought that the little guy from Kansas State, I mean, dominating that game.
He was awesome.
And then I think the shooter, Rice from Texas, were the two most impressive players, I think, and maybe the kid Hawkins from UConn as well. I think you saw a lot of bully ball out there. Like I said, a lot of wrestling. I didn't think it was overly aesthetically pleasing, but I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. Just kind of it's been different this year. UConn is a blue blood. I mean, I heard Carm talking about this earlier before we got him all riled up about his tip for his Uber driver. But UConn's won, what, four titles since 1999 or 2000?
Under three different coaches,
So, I mean, they're a blue blood. But to see Miami and Florida Atlantic and San Diego State in this year's Final Four, to me, has been refreshing.
I agree with you. I like that there is more parity, that you don't know the teams that are going to come out. I mean, some of these teams weren't even picked to win their conferences, and they had amazing runs in the tournament. So I do like that. I really do. I also do like NIL. I think that it's fair. I think that the government is already looking into it because they got to figure out what, you know, some states have.
It's the Wild West right now.
They have rules for high school. Yeah. Other states do not. So it is the Wild West.
I don't know that it needs, I don't know how you regulate it in a fair fashion. But I think that there will come a time where there will be, like I said, some guardrails installed. I don't know how you go about doing that. I think the kids have, you know, these student athletes have been taken advantage of in a lot of ways when the coach is making $5, $6, $7 million a year and the school's getting $100 million a year from a regional sports network, that the trickle down doesn't come to the student. Now, I know that, you know, this has been one of those arguments for decades now. Well, they're getting a free education. Yeah, that's true. I get it. But there is also, you know, they have added value attached to them. So I don't have any problem with the NIL. I just think that they're neat. At some point, you're going to have to find some way to try to regulate it in as fair a way as humanly possible.
I heard Cap saying that it's not fair for these athletes to come in and then leave after a year and enter the transfer portal and then go to the highest bidder.
Well, that's what the coaches do.
Isn't that what coaches do?
Yeah.
I mean, as a parent or as an athlete, you commit to a school very much based on who the coach is, how much, you know, if the parents have a big say, they want to know that coach is actually looking out for their kid. And then they turn around and they take the best job available. So there, you do have to give it both ways, but you're right. It does. Let's go out to New Lenox. Andy wants to join in the conversation. You guys can too as well. 312-332-3776. Hi, Andy.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Good.
What's up, Waddle? How's it going?
You don't like what you're seeing. I see from the screen.
Yeah, it's not even like, it just doesn't feel very Final Four-y to me, if that makes sense. Like, I know, like, you know, I'm all for Cinderellas and everything like that, but like Miami, Florida Atlantic, San Diego State just doesn't do it for me. And part of the reason is, like, I know that, like, next year, these three teams could just be, I mean, they could be, like, Miami last year, I think, lost 17 games. So, like, just overall, I know that, like, this might not even matter next year who wins it.
But doesn't that make it more impressive that they have found a way to survive and advance throughout the course of this tournament?
I don't think it does, because it's, this is something we see like every single year. This isn't nothing new. There's always a 10 or a 9 or someone in the Final Four that makes it. So it's not even like, I'm not like, I'm impressed. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to take anything away from them, but it's not like, I'm like, wow, we've never seen this. It happens every year. I just think it's the San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, Miami that's in there. And it's like, if Florida Atlantic wins a national championship, great for them. But in 2 years, it's not going to really mean anything. And you know, and as sad as that is, NIL, I think, has a lot to do with it. But, you know, it's almost like a little runoff. So, I don't know. I applaud the teams for making it, you know, yeah. Good job. But it just hasn't caught me. The women's tournament, in my opinion, has been way better. Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
Some of the girls that are there are incredible. Yeah. So, I don't know, just wanted to share that.
Yeah, thanks, Andy.
Thank you. Hey, some breaking news in college basketball. Breaking. Sent out from my son at campus at the University of Texas. Rodney Terry has agreed to a 5-year deal to be the next head coach at Texas. So
good.
They
he
removed
deserves.
The interim
yeah.
from his label after taking over for Chris Beard earlier this year.
How much is he going to get paid?
I believe it's around $3 million.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for
he
him.
He deserves it. Long
he may
time
have some kids
assistant
on the team
coach like that. That's
that are
great.
More highly paid than him at some point because of NIL, but that's a contract that he has earned.
He's got 6 super seniors on that team. I mean, that team is almost all transfers.
I don't want to. I'm not trying to portray this thought that this is the greatest Final Four of all time. That's not what I'm saying. And I get what Andy is referencing. I'm just telling you, I'm not upset that it's UConn's the only real recognizable old school blue blood team in this tournament left. Like, I'm enjoying this. I'm not enjoying it more than normal, but I don't think that this has been a crappy tournament because Florida Atlantic and San Diego State, Miami and UConn are the Final Four left standing. I mean, just because it's not Duke and North Carolina and Alabama and Houston. Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed this every bit as much as I would have if it had been chalk.
But I don't know if it... I have definitely enjoyed it. I have found it compelling. I don't know that I'm grabbed to watch the Final Four.
Oh, you will be.
I honestly, because I don't... I
you
don't
just
feel any
Texas
kind of a
got beat.
No. I mean, honestly, I liked Princeton. I liked Texas. I liked finding the different storylines that you could relate to, and I haven't quite found it with any of these teams yet.
Red-ass Dan Hurley's entertaining.
Jim Larrañaga's very entertaining.
He's very entertaining
as well. Did you hear what happened before the Houston game?
No.
Tyler, did you hear about what happened to the squad, at the Miami squad? So before the Houston game, who did they win in that leading up to the Houston game?
They beat Indiana.
Okay, Indiana. So they all got into the elevator at the hotel, the entire team, and they got stuck in the elevator.
Oh, no, that wouldn't go well for me.
The night before the Houston game. Took half an hour for the firemen to get the team out, the entire Miami Hurricane basketball team stuck in the elevator.
I would not have been available for the next game because I am wickedly claustrophobic and I would have had a panic attack and been hospitalized.
Well, I'm thinking with all those tall guys, how do you not put someone on your shoulder and climb up and open up the...
Maybe it's one of those elevators, though, that there's no hatch. There's no escape hatch. Or do you have to have an escape hatch?
I don't know.
If you look at our elevators here...
They don't have an escape hatch?
I don't believe that there's an escape hatch.
Okay. I am a little bit claustrophobic. Too. That's
You're
a little
probably even more claustrophobic now that you've been informed there's no escape hatch.
But he said so after they beat Houston, he wasn't happy with how the defense was playing in the first half, and he told them, "Remember that feeling inside that elevator?
Oh boy,
that's how I want you to start playing defense." That was pretty good.
Okay,
that was pretty good. Tighten it up. Get clog the lane. Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. He's entertaining.
Oh yeah.
I like that. He's entertaining. We need that.
And yesterday was 17 years from the day when he took George Mason to the Final Four.
Crazy.
And he's done it again with this Miami team. And you could say, like, oh, he bought a team. Yeah, it's allowed. And he bought a damn good one.
Yeah, he did.
What is there to be mad about?
This is part of your, this is part of your passion, Tyler. You're a college basketball guy. Are you bothered by what has transpired? Are you enjoying this?
So I'm going to love it no matter what. And I'm in the minority. I understand why people don't like it, though.
What's the difference, though, Tyler, between one of your boosters giving $1 million to the athletic department to redo their locker room so that they have the best state-of-the-art locker room for recruits. They come in and they feel like they are first class, right? Or now that booster, instead of giving it to the athletic department, is giving it to a player. What's the difference?
I guess the one difference is that $1 million that you're giving may be a one-year thing for a kid who goes one and done and then goes to the NBA versus if you put $1 million into the program with facilities or whatever, that's a long-term investment.
And then who gets, so they start winning because they're recruiting better, because more guys like it there, and then who gets the benefit? The head coach gets the raise.
Or if the head coach, maybe they bounce to the next job too.
Right.
So I guess it's the school that gets the benefit ultimately. And listen, I don't care how you do it. Just go out and win at this point. Like that's, you look at a lot of these older coaches who are unwilling to adapt to the times, and a lot of them, they're not in the sport anymore because they just couldn't keep up. I mean, look at a guy like Jay Wright.
He got tired of it.
He got tired of it. And he knew he couldn't keep up anymore, so he left. Roy Williams, same thing. Jim Boeheim, Coach K, same thing there. Mike Bray, he's out.
Well, I think Jay Wright left like much sooner than we all anticipated.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can understand why Roy Williams and Coach K eventually left, but and Jay Wright has found out that, you know, sitting on the desk right now is every bit as
he's fantastic at it too.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
Every bit is financially rewarding as being the coach. What does he have? Two titles? Doesn't he have
two?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go out to Streamwood, where Joe is hanging on. He wants to get in on the conversation as well. Hi, Joe. You're on Waddle and Sylvie.
Hey, guys. How are you? Hi, Tom and Peggy.
What's happening, Joe?
Just wanted to jump in on the college of basketball definition of blue blood at this point. Since there's more parity in college basketball, is the definition of blue blood changing from what it used to be?
I mean, maybe so, but like, I'm thinking when you think of your blue blood, you know, programs, you're thinking Duke and North Carolina and UCLA and UConn. UConn probably not as recognized as much so, but I mean, yeah, listen, it's just kind of a name tag that goes with
it. Listen, this is, I like to think of the Chicago neighborhoods, Joe. There are neighborhoods that are known as blue blood money. They are old money. It is blue blood money. It's gone through the generations. And then there are neighborhoods that are considered new money. And this is where the tech people are living. It used to be where, you know, people who made all their money at the Board of Trade are living. So I don't know. I think that it's very similar to that it's more, it's going to be the new money, not necessarily blue blood. I don't know that blue blood will ever change. It's just new money.
Right, because, you know, UConn, you know, they won their first in 99, so it's been a little over 20 years, and they've had, you know, a decent run, winning four in that time span, and most likely at this point winning their fifth. But you have UNC, Kentucky, UCLA all winning. You know, UNC has five or six, Kentucky has seven or eight, UCLA has their 11. But that's over a large time span. Where, yeah, there were some dips with those teams, but you have UConn in about a 20-year span winning those. But they had, you know, it wasn't sustained consistency with them at this point.
Right.
So I don't know if you can really say blue blood with UConn yet. And, you know, just the same way you can't
Four titles. They've had more titles in the last 20 years than anyone, haven't they?
UConn?
Yeah.
They have. But I'm talking about over a time span with consistency. Yeah, that's great. You know, you have your four titles in 20 years, but they also had those dips in there. You know, granted, Kevin Ollie won one, but then you had the problem with the program as well. So I'm just, you know, sort of curious about that, because I think it was earlier on with Carmen and Yurko where they even threw Gonzaga in there.
Right, I heard that conversation,
I don't think you can throw Gonzaga in there at all with that, even though in that same time span, you know, that 20 years that, you know, UConn has won, Gonzaga's been to the tournament every year, been to the Sweet 16, Elite 8, even more than UConn has. but yet you can't call Gonzaga.
Well, they've never won, right?
Well, maybe they're new era blue blood. Maybe they're, you know, because you have the old era, you have the North Carolinas, you have the Kansas, Kentucky, UCLA is a blue blood.
Absolutely. Duke.
But they're not a new blue blood as much, even though they've had success recently. Yeah, Indiana.
Yeah.
I think those are your old blue bloods, but there's definitely some newer blue bloods who have won more in the last 10 and 15 years.
I think the interesting conversation, I heard Carmen and Yurko talking about it as well, is just when you think like this is going to, you know, different schools are going to become consistent participants and consistent difference makers. Like Butler for a while, right? Didn't Butler go to the final game back to back? Now, I mean, Butler is a non-factor at this point. It's hard to maintain that level of being a significant player over an extended period of time. And maybe that's where some of the parity does come in.
Right, and even more going forward now with this. I mean, what are the chances of anyone going back to back ever again? With all of this.
Well, not anymore. Not with NIL and with transfer portals. I mean, you almost have to change how you recruit from year to year. Or do you recruit for your base players and then you just plug in your transfers?
But see, I don't know that we are on the cusp of any type of like new horizon. Because think about it. Last year's title winner was Kansas, right? Who was the favorite to win this tournament when the tournament tipped off? I think we're one, weren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Alabama was the number one seed.
Right.
You know, Houston, but
Kansas
was in that conversation.
Sure.
I think that this year it's been fun to see a 9, 2 fives and a 4. I'm not necessarily willing to go to the point where, because of NIL and other stuff, that we've reached a stage in college basketball where it's going to be impossible to win back-to-back anymore. Now, again, I get it the other side of it. North Carolina was the first team to ever be the preseason number one that didn't even make the tournament when the thing tipped off.
Right.
Right.
So,
I mean, that was shocking. But then now that we've seen the tournament, it shouldn't be shocking.
No.
I think I'm with Joe. I think we are going to see a changing of the guard, and it could be on a regular basis, year in and year out, depending on how quickly you can get a team to gel with your transfers, your older seniors that stick around.
Who won the tournament before last year? Kansas. Kansas won last year. Who won the year before?
It was Baylor.
Oh.
I mean, that's new money. That's new. Blue blood.
The way I look at it is there's three tiers, right? You got your blue bloods, your new bloods, and then your true bloods. All right. There's three levels to this.
Who are the true bloods?
True bloods, that's like Michigan State. Gonzaga. They're like teams that either get to the Final Four, but they don't really break through and actually win. So those are your true bloods.
So who are my new bloods?
New bloods are like Alabama. A lot of the SEC schools. Baylor. Alabama. Baylor, I would put in that conversation. Arkansas. So they're like teams that are like kind of up and coming. Florida State for a little bit was in that as well. So those are your new bloods.
Are you a buyer of the blue blood, though? Like, they're always going to have a spot at the top of the food chain?
Because their facilities are always going to be top tier. When you talk about a lot of the blue bloods, too, you're talking about schools that are quote-unquote basketball schools.
Well, wouldn't UCLA be that? I mean, some people are saying that they're more of a – they're not a blue blood, that they're the true bloods.
I think UCLA is the epitome of a blue blood. Aren't they?
I would think they're going
off of a 20-year stretch from almost 50 years ago?
Yeah, but that's the point, though. Yeah. If your domination
is in Indiana as well?
Right. If your domination, it should not matter what era it happened in, you can be a blue blood. I mean, it should be a historical reference. It should not be something new.
I like the variety here. Like, I mean, listen, you eat steak and potatoes every night. It gets boring. This isn't steak and potatoes this year. This is something different. I'm enjoying it. Not more so than last year, but I think it's been cool. I resist the concept that this sucks because no one's going to be drawn to watching it. Because I think every now and again, a presentation change is good. Like, I'm not down on the fact that this isn't some of the bigger name schools competing for a title.
You can watch us on Twitch today and every day on twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. 312-332-3776.
You know
I'm Peggy. I'm filling in for Sylvie. And up next, Waddle's
World. I'm going to freak you out with a couple of stories.
I know I'm not going to like this, because if it's anything with what you were hinting at before, these are topics I don't like talking about. And
you're going to talk about it.
Oh, this is going to be hard.
Yeah.
More on Waddle and Sylvie coming up.
It's that time again when we venture deep into the great unknown.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
A trip inside the mind of a multi-concussed former Bears wide receiver.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him. And he had an all-time day in the use of smelling salt.
Buckle up, boys and girls.
Tom Waddle, everything wants to have a Tom Waddle. If I had a football team, I'd like to have a Tom Waddle on my team, because you draw from that.
It's time to go inside Waddle's World.
Tom Waddle did have to use a lot of smelling salt.
That's right, John. It's about to get freaky in here. Waddle's World is brought to you by our good friends and partners at Wintrust Community Banks. They are Chicago's banks. Find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank. Visit wintrust.com/find us. Member FDIC. Do you want to start? I will defer to you. Didn't you say you had a good poop story?
Oh, yes.
You want to tell that story here?
Oh, okay. I can do that.
I mean, it's a great way to kick off Waddle's World.
Sure, I can do that. So Adam Johns from The Athletic has a great story about Jeff King. So King,
former tight end in the league.
Former tight end in the NFL at Carolina. And he is Ryan Poles, co-director of player personnel, along with Trey Koziol. So King oversees pro scouting and free agency and is involved in draft evaluations. But he has something in common with Sylvie. And it's not pretty.
Both are tremendous athletes and played in the NFL for quite some time. Both are friendly with John Fox. That's true.
Yes, that is true. But that's not.
But that's not it.
No. And now I have to look up what... He literally had the crap knocked out of him in a game.
So how does Adam Johns go here with the interview? Was it something that Jeff King, like, does Adam look at him and go, so, of all the things that you did, both as a player and now in the front office, did you ever poop your pants on a playing field?
So I think he started asking owners and, not owners, executives, maybe at the NFL owners meetings, which start this week, maybe he started conversations about different front offices and guys started telling him, did you ever hear the story about Jeff King as a player?
Really?
He took a high pass from Jake Delhomme, right?
Yeah.
And
In Carolina.
And ended up.
It's so great that you're telling this story right now, because there's a dog outside taking care of his business right now.
Oh, gosh.
Right there in the middle of the street.
Oh,
okay,
I'm
sorry to interrupt.
That's okay. Took a hit that was so hard, he literally pooped his pants in the game.
So what did he do?
Well, I'm not sure, because everyone that Adam Johns interviewed for this was laughing while telling the stories, and they said that he would not leave the field. And so we asked you,
that's one way to create separation. Yeah,
we asked you, does this happen in games, and what do you do?
Never happened to me, but like I said, this is one way, especially for a tight end or a wide receiver, to actually create some separation from a defender, is poop your pants and see how close the defender wants to get to you.
Don't you go change right away?
Well, that would be your thought. Like Bill Romanowski, who was a teammate of mine at Boston College, tells a story that he was playing one time. I don't know if it was with the Raiders or if he was the 49ers or wherever he was. Maybe even Denver. I don't know. But he was trying to play one, and he had had the stomach flu. So he was getting IVs prior to the game. And wouldn't you know, the first tackle he makes,
Oh, gosh.
Explosion in his uniform. Like, he didn't stay on the field. He went in, I think, if the story's correct, he actually had to hop in the shower before he went back out.
Oh, my gosh.
So I don't know what Jeff King is doing staying on the field. At some point, doesn't he have to go in and clean himself up?
Well, you would think so, but I don't. I've seen guys puke on the sidelines.
Yes.
At football games.
I've seen guys actually relieve themselves urinating. They ask people to stand around them.
Around them.
That's why I don't understand why there's not a portalette on the sideline of all NFL games.
They have them in training camp.
Right.
And you see guys all the time run over there.
Why would you have one out there for a game?
Okay. Oh, actually, here it is. The accident happened on 2nd and 1 for the Panthers from the Saints' 38-yard line in the first quarter. It was recorded as a 27-yard completion. Oh, from David Carr.
Okay.
It was David Carr. And see, now Brandon Bean, who is the Bills' GM, can't get through the account without laughing. He crapped his pants on the field. And we were wearing all whites that day.
Oh.
That's what he says. And then former Panthers quarterback Jake Delhomme gives a more specific account. David Carr threw a pass a little high. Jeff went up to get it. I don't remember the safety, to be honest, but he hit him pretty good directly in the stomach. And let's just say there might have been an accident. No one wanted to touch him. And they
quickly did he go in and take care of it?
It just says he... Oh, it doesn't say. It just says that he didn't want to leave the field. I don't know. His family, Jeff King's family, is here in Chicago.
Proud. Listen, this is what happens. We're humans. Stuff happens to us.
So he has something in common, but he did not gamble on a fart like
Sylvie and Luz. No, yes. It was not... Well, then we got into the conversation. Who was talking about? Was it Eric upstairs talking about running and farting? I can't fart while I'm running.
Who does that? He said that you're running and you hear, you know, squeak, 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 squeak. Like, no, the little kids might do that.
Well, that's what I said. I don't, as an adult, if I have to fart, I'm going to stop running, fart, and then continue running.
At what age does it become okay to do that publicly?
40?
Right?
No, I'm joking. I don't know.
I think that guys do it around each other, but to actually really do it publicly in front of, like, other women and stuff.
Oh, no, I don't. No. It's 12? It's not. No, when you're an adult. Are you hanging out with a crew that just randomly farts, breaks wind in the middle of a dinner conversation?
I do think at a certain age, it becomes a little bit more acceptable.
You've ever been in church and someone rips one? There's nothing funnier. There's nothing funnier.
It's the best. In the quiet, and then someone just starts talking. Right. You're like, whoever started talking was the one who did it.
I'm not going to lie. Like, there are moments when, like, I'm in the pew, and I'm wondering if, you know, oh, my God, be careful. Don't do anything.
Do you just rustle around as if, like, bending over to tie your shoe or something?
I haven't done it, but it is one of those things that's an irrational fear. That I'm going to rip one.
In church.
Yeah, right in the middle of the homily. Okay. Because you know what I do. I immediately turn and point to one of my daughters. That's the kind of jerk that I am. Leah, what are you doing? Right. Can't do that here at Mass.
Right.
Okay, anyway, so your story.
Okay.
I have one that I don't know if it tops it.
Okay.
I pooped myself midway through running a marathon, but I set a new record. Says here in the very cute fashion, she made the best of a crappy situation. Avid runner Tamara Torkelson revealed that she once pooped her pants while running the Long Beach Mountains to Beach Marathon in 2018, but she managed to achieve her best running time. She was 31 years old at the time of the incident. Said that her desire to compete in the 26-mile course came from her new mom energy, according to an article. The California native said there was nothing unusual going on with her body that gave her any indication she was going to soil herself. Training was going really well. I knew I was in good shape. Who had run the same distance 6 times before she had given birth. On the day of the competition, she was determined to set a new personal record, as this was her first postpartum race. It wasn't until the 13th mile that she experienced her number 2 crisis. It just came out.
Not her number 1.
And I felt a lot better. Said Torkelson, who didn't break stride for another 13 miles and ended up completing the race in 3 hours and 7 minutes.
All right. Hormones do add to it.
No question.
Hormones definitely add to it. So she just had a baby. Her hormones were stimulated. And then it is actually common. I used to cover the marathon. It was common to see, there was one very famous, probably 25 years ago, a female runner who put her hands in her shorts and
disposed of the
excrement.
It is what it is. Like, these are athletes. She told this news outlet that right after crossing the finish line, she booked over to the medical tent to get cleaned up.
Oh, my gosh. So your body redirects blood away from your digestive system during exercise, which can spark diarrhea. That is why.
Wow. See, like, this is, I couldn't run a marathon. I don't want to be in the car for 26 miles, much less run for 26 miles. I couldn't do it. I think the people that can do this are some of the most fascinating and should be proud of what their body, they're willing to endure. I could never do it. My daughter's run it twice. But she says, when I have to go to the restroom, I just, you know, go off the course and use one of the portalettes there. And then I get back on the course and I finish running.
Yeah.
Like,
why doesn't everyone...
When we see Bleck tonight, Bleck's a big runner. Chris Bleck. And I think he said he's had to pull over, like training for different races, pull over into the woods and take care of business before, I think.
Well, at some point, if you're not a professional runner, why would you not pull over?
Right. Well, she wanted to set a career best. My career best is not as important as the cleanliness of my shorts for the final 13 miles.
No.
But again, I watched, went out and supported my daughter when she ran the marathon twice. I am baffled by the amount of intestinal fortitude and physical ability that these people have that you can run a marathon. I couldn't do it. If you told me that my life will end today if I can't go out there and run a 26-mile marathon. Now, I could walk. I could run a mile, walk a mile, run a mile, walk. It'd take me forever.
Yeah.
But if you told me I couldn't stop, shoot me.
No way. I'm not a runner.
My second daughter's boyfriend he went a couple months ago. It did one of these crazy mountain runs in Idaho or wherever they're at. 40 miles.
Oh, no. No. No.
The altitude, too?
Yes.
No.
He trained for like 4 months for it. Now, you can stop and walk a little bit, but at some point, if you don't keep running, it'll be dark outside and you're going to get lost.
Not interested. No.
Yeah, crazy.
Not interested. You have more, though, right?
Some better stories.
Okay.
Do you want that? Like, I just completely veered away from the sports stuff.
Yeah. No, let's do some more when we come back.
You want to experience death in virtual reality?
No, actually, I don't.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna read you the details.
No, those are things I don't like talking about.
Yeah. No, we're going to talk about it.
Lord.
That's next.
All right.
Listen to us now, live on the ESPN Chicago app. Listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM. Listen now on ESPN 1000. This is Waddle and Sylvie, ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
All right, Peg.
I'm not looking forward to this. I know you have
Well, you don't have to participate in this exercise.
All right.
But I saw this story today, and I thought it was really interesting. You can now experience death in virtual reality with a disturbing new simulation.
No.
Despite all things science tells us about life, nobody really knows what it's like to experience death. However, people have undergone near-death experiences, often come back with tales of what happened after their heart stopped from leaving their bodies and seeing themselves from above to waking up in a meadow. Do you know anybody that's had that experience?
I actually do.
Cap talks about having an experience like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's talked about it.
A friend of mine's father had heart issues, underwent heart surgery, and his heart did stop in surgery. And he said he saw the Blessed Virgin.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And what did she say?
That it wasn't time. And that it was everything that you've heard, that it's, you know, she was cloaked in white. It was like a white, shadowy, you know, looking, and he woke up and he said, "I saw the Blessed Virgin." So yes, I do believe that. I do. But do I want to go there? Hell no.
No.
Because with my
luck. Why are you afraid? You're afraid what somebody's going to say to you.
It is time.
You can't be fearful of that.
It is time. I know. I am. I have a very deep set fear of death. Very deep.
Well, yeah, it is finalized. You know, I mean, it's finality. It's over then.
Yes.
I mean, I don't want to die either. Unfortunately, it's the reality.
I know. It's just so
My wife and I had this conversation last night as well. It was her father's 90th birthday yesterday. But, I mean, he passed away last May. But we had kind of this somber conversation. And she just I think her thought was just it goes by so fast and it's over like that. It all comes to an end for all of us.
Yeah,
which is the obvious conclusion, but it's
right.
You don't want to spend time thinking about it.
No,
but I'm here to make you think about it.
Oh, great!
Now a new virtual reality simulation tries to give people a taste of what it's like to die. Now, I'm not interested in this ride at Disney World. Like, there are other things that you could entertain me with or, you know, encourage me to try. But to find out what it's like to die isn't one of them. Artist Sean Gladwell has created an exhibit called Passing Electrical Storms, which guides participants through a simulated de-escalation of life from cardiac arrest to brain death.
What?
It's actually pretty hectic. Doctors trying to revive you, vibrating bed and floating into space. You're asked to lie down on a fake hospital bed and hooked up to a heart rate monitor. Apparently, the simulation can be so unsettling that there are staff on hand to pull you out of it if it gets too uncomfortable.
Well, of course, because it's like when your blood pressure goes up when you're going to the heart doctor.
Correct.
Because you're so worried about it. This sounds terrible.
Marcus Crook, a Melbourne local who also has an exhibit at the festival, explained that the VR death experience is really like, he said, I can see how people would say it causes anxiety and panic. It definitely borderlines that. They do put your finger on a heart rate monitor and then tell you to raise your hand if you've had enough and want to quit. He continued, what happens is you're laying down, the bed vibrates, you flatline. The doctors come over the top of you. You can see yourself in the goggles, and they try to revive you. It doesn't work. Then you float up out past them into space, and it keeps going just as nobody can really know what it's like to die. Nobody can really know what the VR experience is like unless you're in Australia and able to try it out in person.
Well, it's so everything leading up to the actual passage into the other.
Yes. And you don't want to try that. You're not a thrill seeker.
No, no. Nothing about that sounds remotely fun or interesting. No.
Maybe you just want to test yourself and to see how far you can expand yourself.
No. I don't even like talking about how do you think you're going to die when people say that. How do you think
you're going to die?
I think I'll have cancer. Well, you just asked me.
You just killed the mood of the show. I mean, I don't think I can do 4 hours now after that response. I thought you were going to be like, I don't know, I'm going to be in the ocean in the shark attack.
No. I told you I don't like this topic.
How about brain implants?
Might be second on my list of least favorite topics.
Elon Musk's brain implant company, Neuralink, has approached one of the biggest U.S. neurosurgery centers as a potential clinical trials partner as it prepares to test its devices on humans once regulators allow for it, according to several people familiar with the matter. Neuralink has been developing brain implants since 2016. It hopes will eventually be a cure for intractable conditions such as paralysis and blindness. So there's going to be a good result from all of this. So they're looking now for humans that are willing to have these brain implants. I was telling you the story at the break. My dad told me, long time ago, he said, my dad, I don't know if he could see the future, but he said to me probably 30 years ago when cell phones became kind of a thing. I think I had my first cell phone when I was 22 when I got here in Chicago. And he said to me, he goes, you know, one of these days, they're going to put a chip behind your ear. You're going to put it like right there behind your ear, and it's going to be voice activated. You're going to be able to, it will make the telephone obsolete. You'll just be able to call it up and then have a conversation. I'm like, you're crazy. You're out of your mind. He doesn't drink or smoke, and he didn't do drugs. Still doesn't.
Wow.
But I was like, you're still crazy. I think he's onto something here.
Right?
I think he's onto something.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's a little Waddles world without any sports
stuff. Did you see the calls that
oh, really?
We've spurred? Someone who had to pee during the Shamrock Shuffle. Camera operator when I swallowed a fly live on the air.
Do you remember that?
Oh, I totally remember
really?
It. Yeah. And another who has a near-death story.
Do you want to take Bill's story real quick?
All right, we'll do it real quick. Then
when we come back, we're going to talk to Jeff Darlington, who I believe is at the owners' meeting.
Yes, good, because there's a lot of NFL stuff going on.
Oh, I have a ton of NFL stuff. I just figured I would give you some of this nonsense.
Let's go to LaGrange real quick and get Bill in here. Bill, you had a near-death experience?
Yeah, good afternoon. And by the way, you're rocking the 4 hours. You guys are doing great.
That's right. Should be fine. Halfway home.
All right, so I'm going to eliminate a lot of listeners because I fish. So I'm fishing one day in a tournament, and I'm in a channel with nobody in it. and I make a cast, and my lure gets caught in the trees. I just yank it out, and I knock down a wasp's nest.
Ooh.
And I get 30 stings, and it's like getting hit with a nail gun. It's like boom, 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 boom. And I got away from the mess, and I'm waving my jacket around like a knucklehead. And for some reason, I left that channel and came out to another channel, stepped down from the deck, caught my breath, took a sip of my beer, and fell head over ass into the water and completely passed out.
Done. Oh, my gosh.
And I literally seen myself yell at myself, wake up. And I woke up, and I had taken like two or three gulps of water, and I came up to the top of the water, grabbed my boat, and thank God in this other channel there were other fishermen. And the guy says, come over here, come over here, come to my boat. I get to his boat. He goes, I have a ladder. You can get in. By the time I get there, all I can say is, bees, I can't breathe. Bees, I can't breathe. Done. Next thing I know, I was in an ambulance going to the hospital.
Oh, my.
But you have...
But you
have...
see things. You literally see things, whether it's the Virgin Mary or your mom and dad or whatever. I saw myself yelling at me, wake up.
Wow. How did that... Did it change you in any way, shape, or form?
I kind of look for where I'm casting so I don't...
Imagine if it changed your perspective on life, Bill.
Oh, no. This is like number 6 of 10. So, yeah, I'm immune to it. So
oh, my
kind of
gosh.
Stuff happens to me all the time.
Wow, that's crazy. Bill, thank you.
Yeah, we're glad you're still with us, Bill.
Holy
thank you.
Wow, that was crazy.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of crazy, NFL, owners meetings, there's a lot going on.
Big Lamar Jackson story.
A rapper is texting Robert Kraft of the Patriots. There is crazy stuff going on, and we'll check in with Jeff Darlington when we come back.